Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing. I'm Joe Beal, the founder and CEO of Microcosm Publishing and Distribution. I'm also the author of A People's Guide to Publishing, which distills what I've learned from selling millions of books over the past 25 years.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm. We are an independent midlist publisher based in Portland, Oregon. We have 14 employees, over 650 titles in print with 20 to 40 new books per year, and we distribute thousands of titles from other publishers.
We started this podcast so that we can share what we've learned with newer publishers so that you can learn from our mistakes.
Or perhaps you just want to better understand the publishing industry.
This week, we are going to reflect on some meaningful memories we've experienced, because this is our 100th episode.
I can't believe we've done 99 of these.
Well, actually, this is 100, so we've done now.
We haven't done it yet, though.
100 of these.
Well, I think you're speaking too soon. Anything could happen in the next 15 minutes. But what is probably most likely to happen is us sharing some of our best memories of being part of Microcosm.
Oh, I thought it was our worst memories.
Oh, that could be another episode. That's a good one.
That could be our 200th episode.
What's terrible about publishing?
Or our 101st episode. No, I feel like everyone already knows that part.
No, it was really fun on the bike ride in today. We were preparing for this by talking about our memories, and it just made me feel so good, and it also made me forget some of the things that annoy me.
So I feel there's like things that annoy you?
I don't remember.
You'll remember by the worst memories episode.
That one's really going to, we're going to need some to read some of our therapy books after that.
Maybe that's why we published them in the first place.
Joe, do you want to start with one of your best memories of Microcosm?
Yes. So, many moons ago, in a pre-COVID time, we were on one of our first book tours, and we arrived in Buffalo and we began setting up for the event, and you know, it took hours to set up the tour. And this person comes in and he's like, "Oh, are there still seats? Is this the Microcosm event?" And we're like, "Yeah, but it doesn't start for like two more hours, you know." And he's like, "Oh, okay, good. I'm really glad I got here when there were still seats." And sat down, didn't even talk to anyone. Did not, like, you know, had almost unparalleled access to a litany of brilliant and, dare I say, beautiful authors, and just sat quietly in the chair staring at the wall in an era before smartphones when you, like, didn't even have a video game to play. And then, you know, as it were, life was such that, you know, other people did come that night, but they were people that were, you know, there for a separate art event or because they, like, had connections to the venue. No one else was a, dare I say, fan of Microcosm.
Super fan, maybe.
Prior to that evening. Maybe some of them were afterwards. Let's be optimistic.
I love that person. Was that your first encounter with such a person?
No. Actually, on our very first tour, we started to encounter those people. Actually, my very first encounter with a super fan was on our first tour when we got to San Francisco. We got an email that was just like, you know, "I know you're really busy, but, like, would you be willing to come on my radio show?" And also, this being an era, you know, before podcasts, like, maybe there was digital radio streaming, but, like, radio really meant radio waves. And we were like, you know, we're doing this to promote, we're doing this to meet people, we're doing this to have fun. Like, all those reasons are completely compatible with going on the radio. And it wasn't even, like, an absurd, you know, because a lot of the times, like, radio actually means, well, for those under 40, radio used to mean college radio. And college radio used to mean, you know, 2:30 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. time slots, you know. Whereas this was, like, a very reasonable time of day, you know, during the day, not during mealtime. And the funnier part was that, you know, person was, like, very polite, nonchalant, and then, like, halfway into the interview, like, reveals himself to be, like, a super fan, you know, and is just like, "What about this? And I know about this, and, like, tell me about this." And I was like, how do you know about any of this? You know, because it was, like, at a point in my career where I hadn't really given things much thought, let alone thinking that anybody else would. If that makes sense.
It's the people that believe in you that make you believe in yourself.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that this morning, where I was like trying to be like, did I, and not in regards to this episode, but just more in the generality of being like, what was my motivation? You know? Because I was like, did I have some like egotistical, like, I will educate others deep in it? You know, I mean, I guess when I was really young, I had that, but even by the time I got going, I realized that was, like, a really bad way to develop books, you know? And so even by that point, you know, I really was like, I find this information fascinating, and maybe you will too. And I think that was sort of my general approach to life, which, like, has evolved somewhat, but that, you know, it was, like, a great moment. Just because it was, like, you know, similarly to when we were in Memphis, maybe 10 years ago, and a fan, it was, like, a really big event, so there was, like, hundreds of people, and it was, like, put on by the city at, like, one of their, like, largest farm parks, and a person comes up, and he's wearing, like, a t-shirt that I, like, screen printed in my basement in 2002, you know? And he has, like, just the biggest shit-eating grin. And he's like, I only wear this shirt for special occasions, you know? And you're like, obviously, it's super old. Like, it would have been destroyed if you wore it all the time.
It's funny thinking about this in 2020, because it is amazing to see, like, how many of, like, our best memories are from tour.
It's 2021 now, Ellie.
Oh, right. Well, we're recording this in 2020. Don't tell anyone.
The mystique. You've destroyed the rainbow by explaining it.
You can edit it out, but I don't think you will.
I don't edit out anything. That's hilarious.
I wish you were wearing your I Believe in Santa and Unicorn sweater.
Oh, no. Am I not dressed for the occasion?
Oh, well. So one of my favorite...
That'll be much funnier in May.
I would say all of my favorite moments on tour were, like, the heartwarming moments, which are, like, not actually funny stories to tell, but... There's so many. Like, Joe explained it to me when we first went on tour. He was like, people want to show you the best of their town, and they really do.
Yeah.
And, like, best hospitality, take you to all the coolest parts. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be sleeping literally on someone's floor, but that's, like, really their best, and it's awesome. Except sometimes you do wake up with a sore neck. Anyway, one of my favorite memories from tour, though, has nothing to do with any of that. We were driving through Texas. It was me and Joe and Joshua, and we were doing this tour where Joshua cooked, and Joe and I talked about bikes. And so we had a car just, like, packed with merch, books and t-shirts, and it was a rental car. And we parked that car by the river in Austin, and we went to, like, walk along the river and enjoy it, which we did. It was, you know, not, like...
It costs money to go swimming in the river.
It does?
Yeah, no, that was why we didn't go swimming.
Right. Yeah. Anyway.
We were just, like, incredulous at the thought.
Austin was pretty weird, but it was a nice walk. And then when we got back to the car, we opened it up and we got in and we just smelled something horrible. And it was smoke. And we were like, we think that's coming from our car. So we, like, opened all the doors and we, like, started to take things out. And we were like, where the heck? What is on fire? And when we opened the trunk, we found out that it was in the trunk where there was a fire. And it was a little electrical wiring fire from the trunk light. And it had burned through a whole stack of our most anti-car t-shirts that say, every car a murder, every bike a love affair.
And I think while we were at the river, the car audibly said, oh yeah?
I think so. I think the car was like, I'm having my revenge. Mm-hmm. You people going on a tour in a car to talk about bikes, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
But the other funny thing is, other than Joe's favorite shirt, that stack of t-shirts was the only thing destroyed. Like, the car was very selective in this
Literally,
matter.
My favorite shirt of all time, of course, was the only other thing destroyed in that fire. So
that was a tragedy.
Hard not to take it personally. And then I did try to continue to wear the shirt that had a giant burned hole in it until Ellie kept insisting that I looked... that I was homeless, which...
I didn't say you were homeless.
...is not unfamiliar to me, but...
It was true at the time, but...
I couldn't really continue in good faith to, I think you might have actually said something even less flattering of the situation.
Whoa.
But I let the shirt go, sadly, in a public trash can in Chicago. almost a year later.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would never, like, use homeless as a derogatory term.
I wouldn't know about derogatory. I felt like it was more descriptive.
Well, this is another conversation. But anyway, the next day we were staying with some very kind people in Houston who let us use their washing machine, and we washed all of our shirts because they all smelled like smoke, even if they weren't burnt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually managed to sell all of the burnt t-shirts on the tour. People loved that. I hope, if you are out there and you have one of the t-shirts that the car attacked, we would love photos, please, and stories.
Fan memories are the best memories because they are often the things we do not remember.
So, you know, thank you, the car. Your revenge backfired. You added value to our anti-car merchandise. Good work.
Mm-hmm.
Has anything memorable ever happened not on tour?
No, nothing ever happens at home.
Well, I remember this one season, this whole memorable season when we were developing Autumn Zing's books.
Oh, yes. And that was memorable.
She illustrated these cookbooks, and Joshua Plug wrote the recipes, and it was defensive eating with Morrissey, comfort eating with Nick Cave, and then that same season we were doing the post-structuralist vulva coloring book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were just having so much fun. Like, it was fun. Oh, yeah, there it is. Now selected by a major brand as part of their gift guide. We get the weirdest mail about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Somebody asked if we were canceled. It ruled.
You can't cancel vulvas.
But they weren't suggesting that we should be canceled. They just said something along the lines of, like, I can never tell if they're canceled or not.
Hmm. I guess sometimes when you get, like, the seal of approval from a major brand, that can
Goop
be very
probably
ambiguous.
Was canceled, like, hundreds or thousands of times.
And yeah, it still persists.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah. So, what was notable or special about that season?
I just remember sitting at my desk and laughing so much. Like, publishing isn't always a barrel of laughs,
mm-hmm.
but, like, that season, like, there was a lot of not just laughing, but also giggling and snickering,
mm-hmm.
and, like, it started when we were, like, coming up with the ideas for the books, and then when we developed the covers, and then when we developed the insides, and then when we did the metadata, and then when we got to do the sales pitches, and mm-hmm. just the other people's reactions. It was just really fun.
Yeah.
And we kept being like, can we really get away with this?
I really thought at some point somebody would say, no, you can't do that, to at least all three of those books.
It really emboldened us.
Mm-hmm.
Our line since then has gotten a lot more edgy.
Mm-hmm. More mainstream, really. But I do remember when I was presenting those books to our distributor at the time, and I introduced the post-structuralist vulva coloring book, they told me that I did not have to be embarrassed or say anymore, which I was like, oh, no, I have an entire presentation, if you will.
Definitely they weren't embarrassed at all.
I know. It is always very backwards where people are, it's sort of like when people shout at you that, you're being emotional! You know, when, like, yes.
Some of my favorite career moments, for me at least in publishing, have come when, like, we're sort of bantering about goofy ideas around the office, and then, like, the goofiest of all the goofy ideas becomes the one that we put on a book cover, and it sells really well.
Right.
That's pretty fun.
So many, let's see, circa, well, as Joshua Plug once said, our catalogs reminded him of Mad Max Goes to Gilman Street, which is sort of two cultural references that most people won't get both of, so you can just work that out. But, and then one year we made, like, a very, like, static catalog with one focal point image on the cover and then just our name and the name of the season, you know, so it said, like, spring 2012, these are the books, My Cousin Publishing. And I think it was, like, a book with, like, light coming out from behind the book, you know, and Joshua was like, oh, yeah, that's a new look for you. Like, I could, you know, put those around town and not have to sort of explain why it looks so weird. And you know, which is, like, sort of an interesting idea, and we sort of thought that would be, you know, putting us into a different sort of milieu, and instead we just had way fewer people that wanted to pass out our catalogs, and we were having trouble going through 2,500 copies a year, whereas in the past we had gone through as many as literally 50,000 a year.
I think the moral of the story is Mad Max wants to go to Gilman Street.
And so we were having an editorial meeting here, I think So it was after we moved into this building, so it had to have been at least 2013 or 2014, because I know it came out in 2015, because I saw it the other day. And, you know, I can tell you right now it was Jeff's idea, but Jeff will swear up and down that it was my idea, and then when I explain that it was not my idea, he will tell you that it was somebody else's idea, not his own. And that was the idea to make the fold-out poster comic with the catalog on the back. And I do, you know, to me, those are, like, the most heartwarming memories of all, because it's, like, whenever somebody here has a good idea, they try to give credit to somebody else.
Oh.
And it's really, like, the group think that makes the ideas good, you know? And often it's things that, well, you know, like, all good ideas seem obvious in hindsight, if that makes sense. Whereas, like,
bad ideas seem like they were formed by committee, which they probably were.
And, like, normally are severely workshopped to death. So, you know, like, that's always the stuff that I will remember the most, is the things that, like, we did as a team. Or, like, you know, there's so many times where, like, standing in the parking lot together, like, everybody's going home exhausted at the end of the day, and then, like, somebody will be, like, growing your small world. Or, and then everybody would be like, oh, that's really good. Is that our slogan? And then be like, oh, I just thought of that.
And then it became our slogan.
Yeah. And there's so many things like that where you're just like, oh, huh. And, you know, like, I'm just exhausted, and it's neat to see, like, other people, like, feeling ownership and taking investment and, like, you know, like, caring, essentially. And, like, there's so many years of those kinds of moments that's, like, forever what I will remember. And, like, people not being selfish or competitive about it.
It is really, like, it would be so easy to do a worst memories and worst moments and, like, to tell you stories of every time that somebody, like, behaved badly or was a jerk. But honestly, like, that is 5%, if that.
Right, they're just the most entertaining stories. So.
And, like, the stuff that sticks with you. But, like, yeah, I know. Like, all of the authors we work with are so amazing.
Right. It's true.
If you're watching this, authors, you're amazing. We love you.
Stay amazing. Stay gold, as they say.
And then, like, being at events and people coming up to the table and, like, watching people discover the books is, like, one of the greatest joys of my life.
Is Stay Gold from The Wizard of Oz?
I don't know.
Where does it come from? Anyway, that doesn't
gold
matter.
Is a little loaded in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, right. Maybe stay gold is a bad thing.
It's more of like an economic statement, though.
Right, whereas like in our culture, stay gold means like stay pure. Like your innocence
you're a shining star.
Is your value, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. It is like we've had our share of ups and downs. And, you know, I feel like there's a sort of an ethical but dangerous undertone sort of throughout where, like, things could collapse at any moment, you know. And that's, like, makes it for more memorable experiences, too.
And it's true. A lot of our most memorable experiences, especially on tour, like, looking back at the time, were not fun. But looking back, were so fun.
Right, yeah.
Or, like, such good memories to have. Do you want to talk about when we broke up with the dinosaurs?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this is years ago. We were renegotiating a contract with our distributor at the time. And we...
normal contract negotiation, not like...
Yeah.
You know.
It wasn't tense. It was just like... You know, we had gone and had a meeting and, you know, we were like, here are our, like... the problems that we've been having, and so, like, here are the things that, you know, we would like to, like, make this keep going, and, you know, here are the things. And, you know, and they had actually offered some things that we hadn't asked for, and so we were like, oh, that would be great, you know. And then we went back to the offices, and we were, like, immediately told that we would not be getting the things they had offered that we had not asked for because something, I don't know, something had changed that was not to be specified. And, you know, I made a, you know, so I told some people and I was like, okay, this is what happened. Like, this was taken off the table and, you know, we won't be getting that anymore. And I told some other publishers. So we rode our bikes to a publisher happy hour. And just as we arrived, we got the news that our contract was terminated by our distributor. And they cited things that I had said to other publishers, but didn't acknowledge that that's where they got that information, such as the fact that we had other options. And, you know, we went to that happy hour, and I was just, like, downtrodden and dour, and I was like, because I, like, was fully aware of all the costs and consequences of either losing those sales or the amount of work to get our house in order to make that transition. But everybody I talked to that night was like, oh, you guys are in a unique position to self-distribute, and I'm surprised you don't do that already, and, you know, this is really a blessing in disguise, and you should lean into this hard. And we were like, oh. And, you know, and I think they're being honest and earnest, and, you know, that was certainly the perception, I believe, you know. And so I wrote them back the next day, and I said, you know, and I contacted all the employees there, and I said, you know, thanks for our years together, and I really appreciate these various things about each of you, and, you know, thanks for all the hard work you did on behalf of our books. And I got a message back from the person who had terminated our contract to say...
2 weeks later, though, right?
Yeah, probably. And, you know, and was just like, why are you contacting all these people? We're still in negotiations. And I was like, well, you did send it in writing that our contract was terminated, which is what is stated does terminate our contract. And I was told that this is merely a negotiation tactic. At which point I was like, oh, okay, if this is how you consider good faith negotiation, I suppose that nothing is off the table then. You know? And so we had a phone call, and we agreed to continue for another year. And at the end of that year, we decided that we would self-distribute. So we spent that year getting our house in order, hiring sales reps, many of which were referred to us at that happy hour, and getting, you know, our software in order to do all the things it would need to do that it couldn't do before, getting our warehouse in order because it would have to, you know, ship and receive returns at such a higher volume. And, you know, essentially just bringing on... We didn't actually have to hire any more staff, I don't think, to do that yet, because we had warehouse staff, and, you know, we were doing so much in terms of other distribution already. And immediately our sales increased 68% over those first 3 months, and they stayed stable, up 64% for the year, for that first year. So that was incredible, you know.
So that was like a very terrible moment followed by wonderful affirmation, and we were spurred on. I mean, would we even have made the decision to go independent if it weren't for that combination of factors?
I think about that a lot, maybe more than I should, you know, because I'm like, yeah, would we? Because, you know, there's these things that mathematically, you know, or maybe I should say I know, are in our best interest and what we really should have been doing all along. And, you know, and honestly, that's what I wanted to do before we went into those agreements. But, you know, you don't necessarily have the impetus to do it. Because, you know, sometimes life is about the path of least resistance, or, you know, or you have these, like, crippling doubts, or, you know, just other factors that kind of get in your craw and make you think that you don't actually know what you actually know, you know? And so, now the proof is in the pudding, and, you know, and I'm like, I guess I have these people and their ideas about good faith negotiating to thank for our newfound success, because that's really what has allowed us to grow. And, you know, and now we're adding another warehouse. I guess we'll have to do a whole episode about that. You know,
I'm excited.
And we're
a happy memory in the making.
And I don't even know, how many people have we hired this year? Six more? I mean,
we've hired six people.
Like, it's just like a wild roller coaster. You know? So thank you for telling us that we were being rejected. And I feel like every rejection I've ever gotten has been the thing that has, like, put me at the success that I have now.
And also, fellow publishers, thank you for the encouraging feedback.
Yeah, you've been awesome. And, you know, keep socializing, and we will hopefully offer positive feedback to our fellow publishers as well.
I have one more memory to share. It's a Christmas memory.
Oh.
So, for a few years, our Christmas Day tradition was, well, for a few years we did inventory, and we counted everything in our warehouse every year, which started out taking like about 4 days and then ballooned to taking 2 weeks, and now I just can't do it anymore. We kind of do rolling counts. But for 3 or 4 years running, on Christmas Day, me, Joe, and our friend Lindsay would all get together in the shop, and sometimes somebody else would come too, and we would just sit, we would put on heavy metal music, and we would count things all day long, and we would order pizza partway through, and sometimes we would stop and chat, but mostly we would just count, and it would be like a really long day, but it's such a good day.
I like that you have to call it Lindsay's penchant for heavy metal music, that that's a notable aspect of it. I guess we don't really listen to much of that otherwise in our lives.
I guess, yeah, listening to feminist heavy metal is not something that happens in my daily life, but it's part of my, now, my memory of my favorite Christmas tradition ever.
Hey, we're still young.
Lindsay has since moved out of town and has a lot of awesome things going on, but sadly we will be missing our tradition this year.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise I'd be all in.
Right, because it's kind of like, it's like building a barn together with your neighbors, you know?
Totally.
Even if you're just counting books and, you know, because it is sort of a, it's like an open invite Thanksgiving party in a sense, where you're like, we're doing this thing, you want to do this thing with us? And sometimes people are like, what is wrong with you? And other times, you know, they're like, oh, wow, that, can I come? You know, that sounds great.
If it's right for you, you know. And if it's not right for you, you also know.
Mm-hmm. And no need to judge us, but we know you will anyway.
Hopefully positively. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Oh, is there another way to judge us? I didn't even think of that.
Anyway, if you ever want to come count things on a major holiday.
Or just, another holiday or a non-holiday or, you know. But, yeah, I know it is fascinating to think because it's often the thing that I am asked to perform on command is, like, to tell stories of this nature because, you know, I guess stories in a way encapsulate, like, the heart and the history of the organization. And, you know, it always feels very reductionist to be, like, this thing that happened 10, 5, 1, 20 years ago, whatever, is indicative in any way, but, you know, it's like all those things like sort of build the tapestry of what makes us unique, you know, that like we overcome a lot of various hurdles and hardship, you know, and I feel like that, you know, not only like hardens us and like makes us who we are, but like puts us on a path where we make decisions very differently from any other publisher, you know, and I think that's like what is so cool about us, if you were to ask me that question, which you did not.
I keep thinking of more awesome things, but I think we probably should wrap this up.
More awesomest.
I was thinking about how we met because of Microcosm.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
We met several times because of Microcosm. Mm-hmm. I bought
one of which you remember.
You at events. I remember them. They just were differently notable to me at the time than they are now.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
I began as a Microcosm customer.
Mm-hmm. Don't we all?
I bought some stickers, I bought some t-shirts, and then our office spaces were next to each other.
That's true.
A while.
We were like,
and that's how we really connected.
Four doors apart, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different time.
Lots of good memories. That's like a lot of different memories that are all good.
Mm-hmm. I know, I do. We were once in the basement of a former church converted into a community center, and I will forever remember when we outgrew that building, we had to give our notice that we were moving out. The number one response that we got from the fellow tenants was like, "Oh, that's too bad. Now all the cute people won't come here anymore." 'Cause like that was our role, and that was like what they found notable or interesting about us. I loved that. That was pretty.
If you're watching this, you're one of the cute people. We think you're adorable.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at microcosm publishing.
On Instagram at microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.